This is a congregation that gathers in faith. Not faith in just one way. We gather in faith of the power of diversity, the power of love, and the hope of a world transformed by our care. We gather in faith of ourselves and those around us. Not a faith that requires perfection or rightness in one another, rather a faith that in our shared imperfection, we may learn to stumble and fall together. Faith that we will help one another to rise and to try again and again. So good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Sunday gathering of Kensington Unitarians here at Essex Church. It's cold and grey and wet outside on this January morning, but inside we are warmed by good company and by our commitment to one another. And by our simple chalice flame, we're connected with progressive religious communities the world over.
For this 1 hour, adapted by Paul Stefan Dodenhoff and Eric Walker Wickstrom. For this 1 hour, may we let go of our anxieties, our fears, our anger, our self-doubts, our regrets, our grievances, and our distractions. If only for this 1 hour, let the flame of this chalice burn them from our hearts and minds and light our way to peace, serenity, and hope. Here, today, in this place and with these people, may we listen so that we can hear. May we hear so that we can feel. May we feel so that we can know. And may we know so that we can change ourselves and this world. May this chalice we light our way.
So much of the human story just in this one room, in one city, in one country, in one part of the world. Let's take all those joys and those sorrows into our time of prayer and reflection now, in which I call on the divine spirit of life and love to be with us now and to bless all that we say and do together this morning. Let each of us call on whatever higher power we feel a connection with, the God of our hearts and our understanding, whatever these words mean for you. And as we think this morning of the human condition, I invite you in a moment of stillness now to find some gratitude in your heart for some aspect of your life that you know you are fortunate in. Something that you're grateful for. Your fortune, your good fortune. And then let's take that energy of gratitude and apply it, if that makes sense to you. Apply it to an area of life that you are struggling with. For surely none of us here this day has a life completely unblemished, a life without difficulty. Can we take some of that gratitude and then hold our thankfulness alongside the awareness of our difficulties? Whatever has perhaps befallen you, perhaps what you were born having to deal with, those aspects of life where we wish we had more or maybe less of something. And then with both these areas of gratitude and difficulty, let us imagine perhaps zooming backwards out into the universe and looking back down on our beautiful, troubled planet Earth home. And imagine the billions of lives, each with their joys, each with their sorrows, intermingled at different times through their life story. And know that we are part of this human drama. And that one of our tasks is to share our tiny piece of the human drama with others. And in just a moment of stillness now, I invite you to send your thoughts and your prayers to any area of the world or your own community or indeed yourself that is in need of loving compassion this day. And may we constantly be searching for ways to put our thoughts and prayers into useful action this day and all days. Amen.
There is more love somewhere. It's a reflection by Dr. Glenn Thomas Ridout, a Unitarian Universalist minister from the States, from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, well, here's a tale he tells. Last summer at General Assembly, I walked out of the sanctuary space that we had made in the convention center. As tired as I was, I felt myself returning more and more to my deeply introverted default of self, and I passed a woman who had to stop to talk to me. She walked up to me and said, "Dr. Ridout," because she had enough grace to remind me of my title. She gave me the opportunity to resume my church face and posture. She held my hands as if we had known each other for the longest time. She looked into my eyes and she said, "You know what? I always sing that song, 'There is more love right here. There is more love right here. I'm gonna keep on because I found it. There is more love right here.' I don't understand why it is that we don't sing it like that here at the General Assembly. Why do we sing 'There is more love somewhere'? We've already found a community of love." And because she had enough compassion and grace to call me Dr. Ridout, she had given me enough time and opportunity to summon up a bit of stillness from the weary remnants of my churchman's posture. She looked into my eyes and asked with genuine curiosity why it is we don't all sing the words that she had come to know. I was compelled to respond to the woman I had just met with, "Thank you for trusting me with that question." And then I explained to her why I thought it was necessary, particularly with the music of people of color. This song comes out of the experience of slavery, that we enter and examine these songs with more curiosity than colonization. I thanked her and I explained that for those of us who live with the privilege of knowing love, it can be difficult to understand the perspective of one who lives without such a privilege. I explained that it can be difficult to understand the lived experience of those who have trouble finding the evidence of love in their immediate vicinity, in their church, in their neighborhood, in their city, in their nation, even in their planet. I thanked her and I explained that for those who don't share the privilege of perceiving love right here, moving towards that idea of examining our privilege had become a vital practice of faith. I offered that if we, as a spiritual community of Unitarian Universalists, populated by well-meaning people, are to mean anything to the lives and deaths of people of colour and of all those who don't share those privileges we might take for granted, we must begin by learning, not squelching, the forms of expression that arise from these living perspectives. And she said, "Thank you. I've never heard it expressed that way. I've never understood it that way. And I will never sing it that same way again."
Thank you, Anthony. And I'm grateful for that reading because this is a hymn. We're going to sing it now. Have a look at it. It's number 95 in this grey hymn book. It's called "There Is More Love Somewhere," and it's mournful. And I think that reading helps us to understand a little bit where that sadness and longing comes from. Let's sing together hymn number 95.
"Privilege used to annoy me, now I get it." Excerpts adapted by Gabby Hinsliff, who's a Guardian journalist. When the phrase "check your privilege" began to be bandied around on social media some years ago, the sort of rough shorthand for "you can't possibly know what you're talking about because unlike me you've never truly suffered," it grated. I told myself that was because it was invariably deployed by sanctimonious people when losing arguments. But in the last couple of years, as "check your privilege" has gone whatever fashionable catchphrases go to die, it's been superseded by more thoughtful examination of what privilege means and what responsibilities it confers, I've come to realise that isn't really why I hated it. It's probably not why anyone hated it. The real problem is no one likes to think of themselves as privileged, with its connotations of pampered ignorance and thoroughly undeserved success. Yet most of us are vulnerable to the charge on some level, myself included. If you're a man, or white, or straight, or healthy and able-bodied, if you have more than the median national household income coming in, or be sickly to surprise to know that that is 27,700, then you're privileged on at least one score, and there may well be some experiences you don't properly understand. If you're old enough to have bought a house or flat, while that was even remotely possible, or to have got a university degree for free, or to have gone to university full stop, or even just to be functionally literate, well, then you were in some senses a winner in life's lottery and should bear that in mind when judging others. Failure to check generational privilege is behind virtually all articles suggesting millennials could become owner-occupiers by spending less on avocado toast. Privilege isn't reserved for those who went to Eton, and it's all relative. And yet to confess that having been dealt even one good card in life invites the charge of not having succeeded on merit, which is why so many people refuse to accept it. We'd rather see ourselves as the deserving guys, the ones who made it against the odds. And so we dwell lovingly on the ways in which we were disadvantaged, because most people can tick at least one of those boxes too. Like many people, I could tell my life story in two ways, and both would be true. Privileged, it depends on who's asking. And if that's what used to be called checking a privilege, recognising you've been lucky in ways it'd be churlish to ignore, that consequently it sometimes pays to shut up and listen, that truths each of us hold to be self-evident may look very different from a different perspective, well then I was wrong. Checking your privilege is no bad thing.
So we're moving into the more meditative time of the service now. You might want to put down anything that you don't want to hold on to, or hold on to anything that you would like to hold on to. Some people like to soften their gaze or close their eyes, whatever works for you. Perhaps being aware of your feet on the floor and the earth beneath us. Some words written by Marilyn Sewell to guide us into a time of meditation, and we'll then hold a good few minutes of silence and stillness together, and that will come to an end with a chime from our new Tibetan bowl. Father, Mother, God, here we are together. Rich and poor, educated and not so well educated, left, right, somewhere in between, gay and straight, bisexual and queer, male, female, non-binary, cis and transgender. Some of us with light skin, some of us with darker. Some of us walking, some of us struggling to walk. Some of us feeling fit and healthy. Some of us unwell. Probably none of us as whole as we would like to be. Help us to know that we are all your children and we are all holy stuff. So may we be a blessing to the life of anyone who enters this sanctuary. And may this church be a true sanctuary. And may those who come as strangers in turn help us grow in wisdom, in compassion, and in joy of living. Have you played cards recently with a child? I had a bruising experience on Friday night with a card-sharp 8-year-old who, once he knew he was losing, decided to swap the cards that he'd been dealt for some better ones, because he said he preferred the ones with the pictures on. But as weary adults, we usually know that when it comes to the cards that we're dealt in life, we generally actually just have to do the best we can with what we've got. Today, we're continuing with our ministry theme for January of chance, luck and randomness. And we know, don't we, that our experiences of life and the particular sets of challenges and opportunities we face as we make our way in the world, they're largely shaped by all sorts of random factors that we did not choose. I'm going to go through a little list here and have a think about what these examples actually mean for your life, how they made you what you are. There's genetic inheritance, things like race, sex, inherited conditions perhaps. There are the time and the place and the circumstances that we're born into. There's habits and preferences we've picked up from our families and cultures. There are the physical and temperamental characteristics and predispositions that we're born with. And there are the opportunities that were accessible to us during our childhood and upbringing. If only we'd had a piano, I might be there instead of Peter playing for us. Now, some of these things we can't change. And then there are others that we might be able to change, but probably not without a struggle. Some of these characteristics give us advantages in life, and some give us disadvantages. And there'll be some variation, won't there, as to which are dis or advantageous, depending on the time and the place and the culture that we're in. And this is the one that I want every politician to remember for all time. The more disadvantages we're handed in the first place, the less likely it is we'll overcome them all. If opportunities are denied us early in life, our options are limited, and as time goes by, disadvantages can accumulate and it becomes ever harder for us to catch up. Which is not to say that's always the case, but it is largely the case. And bringing in a theological message, if we think, as I know some of us do, that each person is a spark of divinity, and I think that the purpose of life is to flourish that spark of divinity, then it's a bit of an outrage, isn't it, that some people are hindered from flourishing because of the hand that they were dealt at birth, and also that other people are given a boost in life because of the equally arbitrary accidents of their birth. A quotation for us, and this is from an Australian public information site which encourages healthy relationships, and it really spoke to me when Jane sent it me. People often talk, the website writes, people often talk about how lucky they are to enjoy certain benefits and opportunities in their lives. Expressing gratitude is great, but sometimes saying luck instead of privilege means that we miss an opportunity to think critically about power and about the structures that create and maintain unequal societies. Because privilege is an unearned benefit, opportunity or advantage given to someone because of their identity. When we talk about privilege, we're asking people to think critically about power and the way it can sometimes be held by certain people because of facets of their identity. You might think of things like race, religion, gender, sexuality, class, wealth, or ability. Recognizing privilege is an opportunity to foster empathy, increase understanding, and play our own part in correcting some of the inequities that exist in society. That's from The Line, an Australian public information site. I remember my mum telling me this very early on in life, and then telling it me again and again and again when I complained about things. Life isn't fair, and each of us does indeed have to play the hand we're dealt. But those of us who are relatively privileged, well, we might choose, mightn't we, to acknowledge the role that luck has played in our lives. And then consequently, we might choose to share our good fortune and play a part in overcoming society's inequalities. This idea of checking your privilege is a process, then, of checking our own blind spots, being aware of the difficult realities of other people's lives compared to our own, those realities that we often filter out in life. We just don't notice, because on some level we think everybody's just as fortunate as we are. Once we do start thinking about our circumstances in life, most of us discover that we are privileged in some areas and we're disadvantaged in others. And the American civil rights advocate, Kimberly Crenshaw, introduced a concept which I'd not heard of until this week called intersectionality, to describe the way in which multiple different dimensions of advantage and disadvantage can intersect. So that means that we can be privileged in some regards and disadvantaged in others. And we're aware, aren't we, that there are many different dimensions of advantage and disadvantage, and that in our particular time and place, certain factors have more impact than others. I would raise the issue of inherited wealth, for example, race, perhaps even age, and that's one that I'm going to come back to in a little bit. So this might be a good moment to introduce our checklist of privilege. I'm hoping everybody's got sight of one of these, or perhaps you can share with the person next to you. There are various different colours that have no meaning whatsoever. There's a few spares about the room, perhaps. On here, there are 25 different dimensions of privilege. This isn't a comprehensive list. We wanted to remind us, and there's space at the bottom and on the other side for you to add some other aspects of privilege. We've tailored this to our time and place. And I'm not going to let you look too closely, but here, can you see some of my ticks from there? You have somebody very, very privileged standing in front of you today. So whilst you're having a look at this checklist of privilege, and there are some pens on the table if you want to count up your own ticks and see if you've got as many as me, let me mention this one area of privilege that you might have noticed is absent. We haven't added age to this list. And yet the more I thought about it, the more interesting as an area of potential privilege it is. Because we might think that to be older in our society is a disadvantage. Forgive me if I kind of feel like screaming when adverts shout at me about just how gorgeous some younger people are looking, and how any of us over the age of 50 had better start lathering on the anti-aging creams as a matter of some urgency. And plenty of us here are experiencing the effects of aging on our bodies, aren't we? There are all sorts of lovely activities that I'm not going to be doing now. I'm not going skydiving or bungee jumping or bouncing on a trampoline even, or climbing mountains. And I expect all of you have got your secret lists of things you ain't going to be doing no more. Many of us so-called senior citizens also struggle with the challenges technology brings us. Needing to have laptops and smartphones to exist at all, it seems, in this society, yet getting into periodic difficulties when we use them. Difficulties and indeed panics at times. I have younger friends who help me out with my technological difficulties, but do you know what they remind me? In their company, I am painfully aware of my incredible good fortune to have been given not just one free university education, but about three now. And I've been given the chance to buy property when prices were within reach with an average salary. That certainly is no longer the case, is it? So age is an example of a privilege that is relative and intersectional. That word that reminds us of how privilege can be a relative thing. A life experience can be looked at from different perspectives, and a life story can be told, as our reading earlier reminded us, a life story can be told in so many different ways. I've never forgotten being on a personal growth workshop and finding myself next to a rich white man for a whole weekend. Someone from what many of us would describe as a life of privilege, and privileges that he readily acknowledged. But I tell you, his description of a class culture that sent seven-year-old boys off to boarding school where they were never hugged and were told firmly that boys don't cry. Do you know, whenever I now hear certain politicians quite heartlessly judging those less fortunate than themselves, I wonder about the upbringing and the education that they themselves received, which is not to let them off the hook if they're listening. But empathy probably has to be learned, doesn't it? You have to have it as an example. And if we don't learn it in childhood, well, we have to learn it later on for ourselves, I believe. And one way to increase our levels of empathy is what this church of ours is about for me. Here, we're creating opportunities to tell one another our stories and for others to sit and listen to us for a while. Listen without interrupting. Aware, as always, of that ghastly human tendency to judge, because we always do that, but able to set our own opinions aside for a while and just listen. We need to hear more of one another's life stories if we are to understand better the complexities of power and privilege in our society. I mean, we know another message that you will often hear here at Essex Church is that we're all more human than otherwise. There is a great deal that is connecting us all. We've got more in common than that which divides us, and we all have our sufferings and successes. But the effect of the differing hands we've been dealt is really significant, and we would do well not to pretend otherwise. Do you know, I sometimes wonder if we've actually got a moral duty to acknowledge the privilege we've been given and then do whatever it is we can do to just level the playing field just a bit. So the more that we overcome the limitations of our understanding, the more we're able to remove those blinkers that stop us from noticing other people on the streets of London, really noticing. The more we overcome the limitations of our understanding, of our own position and the position of others, surely then the greater our potential for understanding that together we create one human community in all our diversity, with all our individual stories to tell. All sparks of the divine essence that connects us all. Amen. So to wish for compassion, to pray for courage, to experience doubt, to bear sorrow, to strive for sureness, all these are qualities for which each of us can be grateful. Oh, but to feel a genuine fellowship for the whole human family, to act so that our empathy is evident wherever we go, that's the object. That's the lifelong goal. Amen. Go well. Blessed be.